From sea to shining sea, America's favorite uncle, Bumpkin Bob.
Hey, y'all, this is Bumpkin Bob coming to you from the Bumpkin Bob Show here at the Bumpkin Studios in beautiful Siloam Springs, Arkansas, located up here in the very far northwest corner of the state. Now, remember, we love this state, so don't screw with Arkansas. That's something about, you know, that don't mess with Texas crap. Hey, when we get started this morning, or as we get started, we're going to throw out a few announcements, a few hey's to some people. First is my sister and brother-in-law both had birthdays this week. That'd be David and Vicky. And so we want to throw a happy birthday, belated happy birthday out to both of them. We won't tell you their age. No, I'm not going to do it. I started to go ahead and do it, but no, I'm not going to. So anyway, happy belated birthday to y'all. Tomorrow, Sunday, I do believe is my son and his wife's anniversary, wedding anniversary. So we're going to throw out a happy anniversary to Zach and Jennifer. They are currently in Washington, D.C. on vacation. Been seeing some of their stuff on Facebook. Looks like they're having a good time, getting to see a lot of the historical stuff there in Washington, D.C. and do a bunch of cool stuff. So happy anniversary, y'all. Enjoy your vacation. Have a safe trip back. I want to throw out a congratulations to my son-in-law's brother and sister-in-law, Matt and Liz. They had their baby this week, little baby boy. I believe they named him Nash. So here's a congratulation out to y'all, Matt and Liz. Want to give one more shout out to, and you're going to hear me talk about them quite a bit on this show from time to time, and that's Brian and Terry Kinder, happens to be my sister and brother-in-law. If you know anything about Kinder Songs, kindersongs.com is their website. Check them out. They do children's music, travel around several states, play in a lot of elementary schools and libraries, public libraries and stuff. If you get a chance and you've got those like toddlers up to, you know, probably second or third graders, make sure you get out there and see Brian and Terry. They really have a lot of fun. Kids really enjoy their music. It's geared towards them. The whole show is geared towards them. So make sure you get out there and see them. They do a really good job. That being said, because that's something cool for grandparents to take their grandkids to, just so everybody knows, she finally made it official last weekend. We didn't get to talk about it then, but we're going to talk a little bit about today. But my daughter is pregnant, so the old Bumpkin's going to be a grandpa for the first time. Very excited about that. We'll keep you updated as that goes along. Maybe this week, not real sure. They might be able to tell the gender. Not sure. If they do, we're having a gender reveal Labor Day weekend. So, because we're sure between now and then we'll be able to find out. So I won't reveal that on the show until after the gender reveal, because we've got some cool stuff planned for that for the family and don't want to ruin that by giving the gender away. Besides that, if I did, my daughter would disown me. Anyway, let's move on. We're going to start today with some job site tales. And I'm going to tell a few stories about a guy that used to work with us. We'll just give his first name, Dustin. Dustin actually ended up being more like one of my kids and part of my family than just the apprentice that worked underneath me for a while. Great guy, very hard worker. You won't meet a more hardworking young man in your life. Very funny, you know, he was one of those, he's funny and he's easy to get along with, except for in the morning it used to tickle me because he'd get to the job site usually about, you know, 10 or 15 minutes before time to go to work, and he literally would get out of his vehicle and grab his tools and go in the building with this look on his face like, don't talk to me till I've had my coffee, which I'm pretty sure he'd already had. But usually about first break, he started kind of coming out of it and wasn't so grouchy. It's like I used to tell him, you're too young to be that damn grouchy in the morning anyway. It's like, Jesus Christ, lighten up. But anyway, let's tell a couple of his tales. And you're going to see as we go through this, there's a little bit of a theme to it, so to speak. We were doing a bank over in Rogers. Make sure where that's at, if that's Rogers or Bentonville. I'm pretty sure it's Rogers. And I sent him around behind the bank to put a wall pack up on the outside of the bank, which is basically a metal halite fixture, security type fixture. And he'd been back there for a little bit. I thought, well, I need to walk back there and check on him. So I walked back there, and he's up on an 8-foot ladder. And he's got the wall pack up like this, because those things are pretty heavy for their size. But he's holding the wall pack up there, and his pants are down around his ankles. And I started laughing. I said, Dustin, your pants fell off. What is going on? He's like, I know, but I didn't have a belt this morning. And when I got up here on the ladder and I got that wall pack up here and started mounting, he said, I felt my pants falling down. I couldn't do nothing about it. So he said, it's either drop the wall pack or let my pants fall. So I just let my pants fall. I'm like, thank God you're behind the building. Jesus Christ. I laughed for 30 minutes. I honestly did. Before I go into what I was going to plan as a second story, I might as well tell this story about at the bank. It was the same bank we were. I had Dustin in an office inside the bank putting up the light fixtures. They put in the ceiling grid. This particular is one of the bigger offices. It may actually be in like a little conference room, but it had two by four light fixtures that laid in it. And these things, we called them Relox. They were basically a manufactured wiring system. So the light fixture already had a cable on it with a quick connect, and you would take one fixture and throw its cable to the next and plug it into that cable, and then they all just plug together. It's kind of a plug and play kind of thing. Well, he had all four lights laid in. He went to throw the first cable over to the other light, and just that little bit of pressure, the whole ceiling grid, lights and all, fell to the floor. And I was watching through the window, and I just cracked up because his eyes got about this big around. So I went in there and was like, what you do, Dustin? And he's like, I don't know. Well, the ceiling grid guy came in there, and he's like, oh, man, this is my fault. He said, I didn't even hang any wires in here. And we never noticed. Got to looking around. There's no ceiling grid wires hung in there. And I don't know how he'd even got the ceiling grid up, to tell you the truth. And I said, well, I said, is there anything else? He said, yeah. He said, the ceiling grid in that drive-thru, which is very unusual because most bank drive-thrus have a solid lid in them. You know, it's sheetrock with plaster or some type of finish on it. This one had ceiling tile in the drive-thru, and they were going to use these pretty heavy ceiling tiles that are actually sheetrock with vinyl wrapped around them and then clips to hold them in to keep the wind from blowing them up. But the thing had 2x2 light fixtures that sit in the ceiling tile that were metal halides. These things weighed like 90 pounds a piece. So he's like, yeah, y'all can do that drive-thru out there. I'm like, all right, that's cool. So we take a 12-foot ladder out there and set up underneath the drive-thru. And I tell Dustin, I'm like, you get up on that ladder and I'll unbox this thing and hand it up to you. And then you can just, you know, we'll kind of get some momentum going and just kind of throw it up there in the ceiling. I think we had probably, I don't know, 12 or 16 of these things that went in the drive-thru. Well, we got all set up to do the first one. And I mean, I just got it unboxed and was fixing to, like, deadlift it out of there and hand it up to Dustin. And here come the ceiling grid guy just running. He's like, no. It's like, what's wrong now? He said, man, the wind was blowing so hard when I was doing this yesterday, I couldn't get that ceiling grid to lay flat. So he didn't tie it off. He just stuck the wires in it to kind of hold it temporary. He said, man, if you had laid one of them big old heavy lights up in there, that whole thing would have came down. So anyway, that was kind of a side note. Same job, basically. Same bank. But the other one I was actually going to tell is we did a building here in Siloam Springs, and the owner of the building decided instead of me bringing in our backhoe guy to dig the service into the building, he was going to have his guy do it with their backhoe. And I'm like, well, that's all right. So I told him what I needed, and they were going to dig it that evening after everybody had left. Well, there's a hotel kind of thing right beside this building. Well, while he was digging, instead of digging 2 foot deep ditch like I asked him to dig, he dug about 4 or 5 foot deep. And the hotel had an old sewer pipe coming out of it that was that old clay pipe. Well, he broke it. He got into that sewer. Well, when we got there the next morning, the whole ditch was full of water and you know what else. So they went and got a sump pump, and we pumped the whole ditch down, and me and Dustin ended up, you know, they got a plumber there, got the sewer fixed, that taken care of, but I put on my rubber boots, and we got down in that ditch and got the service put in, got the conduit put in so they could cover the ditch back up. Well, we got it all done. I told Dustin, I said, we're out of here. We're covered in mud and shit, and we're leaving. We're done for the day. So we both go out, and I went to the back of my truck, took my rubber boots off real easy and slung them in the bed of my truck. That's about all I had really on me, but I got my truck started up and started backing up. Had to look up. Dustin's standing behind his truck, and he is literally right between the building and Highway 412. Which, if you've been through Siloam, that's the main road. I mean, it's a lot of traffic. 5 lanes, 2 lanes each way and a turn lane. He's standing at the back of his truck, and he is literally stripped down to his boxer shorts. Nothing on but his boxers. No shoes, socks, pants, nothing. I started laughing. I pulled up. I said, Dustin, what are you doing? He said, I'm not getting in my truck with shit all over my clothes. So he took all his clothes and put them in the back. I said, what are you going to do if you get stopped between here and Fayetteville half naked? He said, I don't know. I said, well, don't call me because I ain't paying your bail, big boy. But that was just Dustin. I mean, it was just funny as crap. And I do have to give Dustin credit for one thing also. Again, he was a hell of a worker, super nice guy, and he actually lives over there at Broken Arrow, Oklahoma now, works for Siemens. But Dustin's the one who kind of, I guess you would say he's probably the most beer connoisseur that I know. I mean, he's really always been into craft beers, the home brewing stuff. He did a lot of that. I think I mentioned one time that a buddy of mine had made some pumpkin beer and how bad it was. Well, it was Dustin. God love him. He thought it was great. I couldn't drink it. It just is like, oh my God. But he was the one who's always telling me, you know, now you need to get out of your like comfort zone with beer. And you know, if you're going to go out and have a beer at a restaurant or something, drink something other than just your normal domestics, because I always just would order Coors Light on draft kind of thing. And, we had done a job in South Fayetteville, the Washington County Animal Shelter, and it was probably about 3 months or so after the job was finished. Me and him one Friday morning. Didn't have a lot going on that day. The only thing we had to do was go over and change some stuff out that they had requested. And it wasn't anything we'd done wrong. It's just they wanted some changes made to some of the light fixtures over there. So me and Dustin went over there and got them changed out. It took us, you know, 3 or 4 hours. And so by the time we drove down there and got finished, it was a little past lunchtime. And again, that was all we had to do that day. So we basically were going to be off the rest of the day. So I told Dustin, I said, man, I said, I want to go somewhere and have a beer, but I want, let's do something different, not just your normal domestics, you know. I want to venture out a little bit. So Dustin's like, well, let's go to Hog House Brewing Company on Dixon Street. I'm like, well, all right, let's go try it. So they, you know, do some craft brews. They have some of their own beer kind of stuff. And so we went over there and ended up sitting out on the balcony. It was during the summer. Of course, school was out at the U of A, so Dixon Street was not crowded. I mean, there was nobody down there, really. And the little old waitress brought us a couple of samples and was kind of helping us with what they had as far as, you know, wheat beers or this kind of beer, that kind, I don't know all the lingo. I know cold, and that's it. You know, bottled or draft kind of thing. All this was draft beer. But anyway, so we finally found something that I liked. So I ordered a tall one of it. And we sit out there and drink it. Then I ordered another one. And I believe I'd finished my second, might have ordered a third beer. I was like, you know, this is about my limit right here. I'm going to have one more. The boss called. He was like, oh, shit. So I answered the phone, and he didn't even ask where I was at, nothing. He started right in about, okay, if you're finished down at the end, when you get finished at the animal shelter, the floor boxes for the U of A job's in, so go down there. They're at the supply house down there in West Fayetteville, or South Fayetteville, I'm sorry. Grab them floor boxes and go over there to the U of A and put them in. Well, it's a Flint Co. job. I don't know if I can mention that or not. I might should have asked my producer that before I said their name. Anyway, it's like, I told Randy, I said, I can't. And he's like, why can't you? And I said, because I've had a couple of beers. I thought we were off the rest of the day. And so me and Dustin came down here to the brew hog house and had a couple of beers. I can't go on a Flint Co. job now. And he's like, you son of a bitch. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Don't talk to me like that. He goes, well, I'm not mad because you can't go down there and put the floor boxes in. I'm mad because y'all didn't call me. He's like, I could have come to Fayetteville and had a couple of beers. I started laughing. I said, well, sorry. He's like, how long y'all going to be there? He's like, man, I'm finishing this beer and I'm going on. He's like, all right, well, make sure Monday y'all go down there and get them floor boxes and get them put in. I'm like, all right, we'll take care of it Monday. So, got in trouble for not calling the boss and going and drinking beer without him. Imagine that. And that's the kind of boss you won't have, ain't it? He didn't get mad because we wasn't working. He got mad because we didn't call him. During this week, I know last week I talked and apologized a little bit about my blow up that I had, and I vented a little bit about, I don't know, people covering each other up and just the way things are done, and I wanted to visit that a little more today about kind of people wanting things done yesterday. I mean, it's getting to the point now in construction, and I don't know about residential construction. I'm just talking about commercial construction. Either, and sometimes it happens in two different ways. Either an owner / and their architect will put out, hey, we got this building for bid, but we're going to tell you on the front end we want it in, you know, like if it's a tenant finish out in 6 weeks, or if it's a complete building, we want it in, you know, 24 weeks or whatever their schedule is. Which also, and they look at that from date of contract. And it's like, you know, so all these general contractors bid it, you know, with the knowledge that they have to have it or supposed to have it done in X amount of time, or they're going to have to pay liquidated damages. That, or you get general contractors that put it in their bid trying to make, well, we're a little higher, but we're going to guarantee you that we're going to have it done in 16 weeks, or we're going to have it done in, you know, 48 weeks or a year, whatever their time frame is that they've decided on that they can get this building done. And it's just to the point that people want things done yesterday, and it affects the quality of their building. I guarantee you it does. People say it doesn't, but it does. I mean, when you're trying to get something done and you're under a deadline that's basically not able to be met because you're going to end up paying liquidated damages, you cut corners. That's just how it is. But I mean, I'm not naming anybody in particular or anything like that. That's just life. I mean, and if owners and architects don't think that's going on, then they're crazy, because they're putting these ludicrous time schedules on these things that people can't meet, you know. And then the general contractors, it's like right here in this area, literally there's so much construction going on that, you know, and there's only so many subcontractors per trade that everybody's stretched as thin as possible. And the general contractor's like, well, hire more people. There's nobody to hire. Everybody that's worth a shit has a job already. So, you know, and you can't hire outside and bring these people in, because, you know, you end up with, like in 08, there from 2000 to 07, 08, it was booming like that. And then all of a sudden it just fell off to nothing. And all of a sudden there was nothing being built in Northwest Arkansas there for a couple of years compared to what had been going on. You know, so if people had moved in here to take those jobs and help fill some of that, they would have just been stuck. You know, it's like, so you really don't get that much influx of people coming into this area for that kind of stuff, because, and there too, it's not like up north, like in North Dakota, where the oil fields are booming and they're paying $35-$40 an hour for an electrician. Yeah, they're getting a lot of people moved up there to take those jobs. You're not going to get that in Northwest Arkansas. So people's not going to flux in it. There's not going to be an influx in here of skilled labor to take those jobs. So you end up just, you know, you get these jobs and they're just under ludicrous, ludicrous time schedules. I probably shouldn't mention this, and I'm probably going to get in trouble because I'm still working this. But the job I'm working on right now, it was supposed to have started 30 days before, but the general contractor didn't have a superintendent, which is a supervisory type person to be on that site. And I'm sure it's because their insurance requires that. So it's like, until they get a superintendent on site, nobody does nothing. You can't be in there working. And it's like, so we're starting it 30 days late, but we're still needing it. You know, we had a 90-day schedule to start with, and we've cut 30 days off of it on the front end, and they still want it done in 60 days. You know, so their answer to that is going to be, well, hire more people. There's nobody out there to hire. I don't know where you think these people are coming from. You couldn't get a superintendent. You couldn't hire more people to get another superintendent. Where do you think we're going to hire people to get electricians or plumbers or block masons or anything like that? They're not out there to hire. You know, this area has the lowest unemployment, probably anybody in the nation. If if you're not working here, it's because you don't want to work. I mean, that's just bottom line. But they still want stuff done yesterday. And it's like, then they wonder why everybody gets upset and pissed off and yelling at each other on job sites. You know, it's like, you cut 30 days out of my schedule, but you still want it at the same time. You know, and they come up, well, work 12-hour days or work 7 days a week. You work 7 days a week. It's like the age-old saying, you know why I work 5 days a week? Because I can't make it on four. If I could make it on four, I'd just work 4 days a week. I mean, these people that think I'm working because I enjoy it and it's something that people think that you just love to work. It's like, I don't love to work. You know, I work to live, not live to work. You understand my meaning there? So it's like, I mean, I'm just at a point in my life, I'm not working 7 days a week. You know, it's like, it goes back to that saying, poor planning on your part does not constitute an emergency on mine. I give shit less. You know, it's like, you should have thought about that 30 days before the job started. You know, we were under contract in February or April. There's no reason why you couldn't have had a superintendent on site May 1st like you were supposed to. That's just how it is. You know, it's like, and another thing, in the commercial jobs, everybody, all the subcontractors and their suppliers go through a submittal process, which basically is, and I'm just going to use this as an example, but it applies to all the trades for the materials that they use. But say my lighting fixtures on a commercial job. Okay. A company rep, sales rep, whatever you want to call it, puts that lighting package together. They send the prices to the wholesale houses. They send the prices out on bid day to the contractors. So wholesale house A, B, and C sends you a price with whatever their percentage of markup is on it, and you take the lowest one. So say wholesale house A had the lowest price, so that's who you're going to use. Well, once you get under contract, they want your submittals, which basically means you call a supply house and you say, we need our submittals on the lighting package. They call their factory rep. They send them cut what's called a cut sheet or cut sheets on each light fixture. It gives all the specifications. It tells the color options and what you picked and the voltage options and what you picked. I mean, it covers everything on that light fixture. Well, you basically get it in a folder and you send that thing in. I mean, it's all nice and neat and professional looking. You send seven copies, used to. Now it's all done electronic, but used to you send seven copies. And here again, it being electronic didn't speed shit up. It's still the same shit. So you send your copies to the general contractor, and then they disperse these out to the engineers and the architects. And then there's engineer, architect, owner, I don't know, three or four people have to sign off on these submittals. And usually it sets on everybody's desk a week to 2 weeks. So you're already, by the time you get submittals back, you're already 2 or 3 weeks into the project. Well, the lighting manufacturers tell us, number one, light fixtures are not built to, or are not built to stock anymore. They're built to order. And they will not start building your light fixtures until you have signed submittals. They're like, this is what we're supplying. And until the engineer and architect and the general contractor sign off on that, we're not going to start building them. And then, I mean, they're covering their ass is what they're doing. So that basically if a light fixture comes in bronze and all of a sudden somebody goes, well, I thought that'd be silver. Well, you get out the submittals and it's marked right there. being supplied in bronze and you signed off on it. It's your light fixture. We'll get you a silver one, but you're still paying for them. You know, so now you're going to pay double for that light fixture, and you're looking at a 6 to 8 week turnaround that you're waiting again. Again, they also tell us once smills are done, 6 to 8 weeks before you get your lights. That's just normal in a commercial job. That's the way it works. I mean, I can't change that. And so you get these jobs, especially tenant finish outs. We want it done in 6 weeks from date of contract. We want to, whatever our little store is, you know, we're going to be in here selling any purses or trinkets or shoes or cell phone covers, whatever it is. We want the store open in six weeks. It's like, well, my light fixtures are going to be 6 to 8 weeks out, and especially if you pick fancy shit and it sits on engineers or architects' desks for 2 weeks. You know, now we're looking at 8 to 10 weeks to even get the light fixture. So I don't know how you're going to be open in 6 weeks. And again, that goes back to people wanting shit yesterday. It's like, I just don't understand it. You know, and it's like, you're also killing yourself in workmanship. I mean, you've got trades that are, you know, that'll cover other trades up because they don't want to be the one, you know, when liquidated damages assessments start getting thrown around, they want to be able to say, well, it wasn't our fault that the building didn't get done. We got our part done. Yeah, you covered people up, but you got your part done, right? Because they don't want to have to pay part of that liquidated damages, you know, for the general contractor to take it out of their account. So, I mean, it's just in the whole construction trade period. People need to slow down and think, you know, it's like they'll plan a building for a year and then they want it built in 8 weeks. It's like, good God, you take up all the time on planning and you don't give any time to the actual construction phase. You know, it's like you need to slow down and think this shit out a little bit. You know, and realize that it ain't going to get done as fast as you think it is. Sometimes I think general contractor, and here's the deal. You know, general contractor A steps back and says, you know, we're not taking any more of those jobs that have these ridiculous time restraints or, you know, they want us to pay stupid liquidated damages if they don't get the building done. But as soon as that contractor steps back and says, we're not going to take that shit anymore, some flobbing out outfit who thinks they know how to build a building will run in and go, oh, we'll do it. You know, and they'll be in business for one or two of those jobs and then they're out of business. You know, it's like, and there again, are you getting the workmanship and the quality that you're actually wanting? It's like, you need to slow down and think about that a little bit. And that brings me to another conversation. I've had this same conversation, and I don't remember how it came up, but the same conversation with two different people this week. And it was about how people dress different today than they did 30, 40, year, 50 years ago. You know, let's just compare today to 1950s. You know, it's like in the 1950s, and I'm just using men. I mean, I'm not trying to be sexist or leave women out of this. And I'm sure if you look, it's the same way across both boards, whether it's men or women. But let's just use men for an example. In the 1950s, when men went to work, if he worked in an office, he probably, it didn't matter what he did, what his job title was, he dressed the part, if that's the way to say that, but he probably wore at least slacks and a shirt, probably white shirt with a tie and maybe a sports coat. depending on where his level was in the country. I guarantee he wore slacks and a tie. Now, whether he wore a sports card or not probably depended on his position. But even the guys that worked in the mail office, slacks, shirt and tie. You know, they dress professionally to work in that environment. Now you're going to see guys working in office buildings from anything from a shorts and T-shirt, if they're working like in the mailroom or something, to casual Fridays or whatever. Men, especially on like residential stuff. Now, the commercial side of construction, OSHA regulates us a little harder than everybody else. And I don't know if it's actually OSHA or general contractors, their own liability insurance. But most of the time, you're going to see guys on commercial job sites, they're wearing long pants, heavy leather sole, but heavy leather boots with a heavy like industrial sole, at least 3 inches of shirt sleeve, a hard hat, safety glasses, and more you're getting into, they're having to wear a green high visibility or an orange high visibility vest while they're on the job site. This is pretty much, except for the vest, the same thing you would have saw on a 1950s commercial construction site, I would believe. Because it just seems like, especially the men I remember in my family, that older generation, that's how they dressed. I mean, even casually, they dressed in jeans and a button-up shirt. I mean, sometimes a fedora top hat or a cowboy hat. I mean, they dressed like men, if that's the way to say it. They didn't dress like little boys. On residential job sites today, which, I mean, every now and then safety people will crack down on these guys and you'll see them for a while dressing like commercial construction men, but most of the time these guys, whether they're framing, electricians, plumbers, they're wearing shorts and tennis shoes, sometimes no shirt, never a hard hat. You never see these guys wear a hard hat. And hell, I've seen guys, framers, up on walking roof, roof trusses and ceiling joists without even harnesses on and being tied off. Man, you can't get away with that in a commercial job site. You know, you got to have a harness on. You got to be tied off to something if you're that high off the ground with no floor beneath you and you're just walking rafters. You can't just be up there lily-dilly doing it. Now, I'm not sure how they get away with it, but it's funny how I bet, and I mean, somebody could probably produce a picture today, show me some guy on a residential job site in 1940 wearing shorts and no shirt. You probably could, but I bet you for the most part, those men were wearing long pants and work boots and probably a khaki or blue colored work shirt, button up top work shirt. I mean, I would almost guarantee it, you know, and it's like, it's just the whole culture of that kind of stuff from the 1950s to the 2000s. That's how much it's changed. You know, it's like, I don't know that if you think that, I don't know, it's just the way men dress. Back then, men dressed like men. And it was just weird. I mean, now you see some guy getting out of his truck in the morning with shorts and a T-shirt and tennis shoes on. You don't know if he's going fishing or going to frame a house. I mean, you have no idea. It's just a difference. I mean, probably in the 1950s, if you weren't actually on a lake You didn't see men walking around in short pants. You just didn't see it. I mean, even on Saturday and Sunday when they went shopping with their wives, I can remember, you know, going to my mom and dad getting up and going to either Sears or Montgomery Ward's on a Saturday, and my dad would have on slacks and a nice shirt to go shopping. And it's like, you won't see that today. You know, you'll see men wearing, you know, raggedy shorts and whatever. I mean, it's just, it's a different day and time, I guess. It's a lot more, the U.S. as a whole is a lot more casual. And since I mentioned it, kind of threw that name out there, Sears and Roebuck, probably next week or the week after, make sure you tune in. And it may take us a couple of weeks to actually get all the information we want to get. We're going to do a little segment on the death of an icon. And I mean, I don't know how many of y'all realize how close to being gone forever Sears and Roebuck is, or Sears as it's now known. But to me, that's going to be – that's the death of an American icon right there. I mean – hell, Sears and Roebuck catalog's been around since the 1800s, is it not? I'm pretty sure they are fixing to go the way of Montgomery Ward's. I'm sure everybody remembers Montgomery Ward's. What, and, you know, in the 60s, probably 50s, 60s, and 70s, again, we're talking about old school. There was a lot of regional type department stores. I know in and around Arkansas we had Magic Mart, West, Gibson's, Howard's. These were all department stores that were basically they had like a sporting goods department. I don't know if they called it electronics back then. Can you call 8-track players and phonographs, or not phonographs, but turntables and stuff, electronics, but, you know, like a camera department, that was what they call it. Usually had a jewelry department. They usually had a men's and women's and children's clothing department. But, you know, those stores have all went by the way. That's not here anymore. And the there was two others that were pretty prominent in this area that not only sold that kind of stuff, but they also sold tires, did auto repair, and that was Otasco's, which was Oklahoma Tire and Supply, and then Western Auto. Well, all those have come and gone. I mean, they're long since gone. And folks, I'm telling you right now, Sears is going to be the next one. And here, if we don't do it next week, it may be the week after. We want to get our facts straight and get some material together before we kind of present that. But we're going to do a little segment about the death of an icon, so we'll be looking for that. And you kind of can look at the department stores going. By the way, men dress, too. I mean, men don't dress like men anymore. It's just – it's weird. I don't know. It's just – And all the small towns and the people who grew up in the little towns around Arkansas, like Bearable or Clinton and where I'm from, or, you know, Jonesboro, even towns as big as Jonesboro, probably remember they had their own department store or dry goods store right there in town that they weren't even regional. They were just strictly local, you know. We also had the Five and Dimes. We had Ben Franklin Five and Dime and Sterling Stores Five and Dime. You know, and those have all kind of went by the way. And it's a sad thing. It really is that those are all dead and gone. I mean, again, it's kind of, to me, it's the whole death of Americana. I mean, we're quickly going by way of everything being digital coming to you through a computer. You shop with your computer. You know, the days of going to brick and mortar stores are slowly going. Hell, at Walmart, as far as groceries go, and it's not at every Walmart yet, but it's coming. You don't even have to go in the store to do your grocery shopping. You do it online. You pull up at the store and beep your little horn or whatever you do, and they come out and load your shit in the car and you leave. You don't even have to go in the store anymore. And it's like, how crazy is that? I mean, that's where America's headed, America. But I don't know, the whole thing, everybody wants everything yesterday. I mean, building trades have kind of gone the same way as shopping's gone. I mean, people don't want to, they don't want to go get something. They don't want to order it and wait for it. They want to buy it online, have it shipped yesterday. You know, they, oh my God, I can remember when I was a kid and you ordered something through the catalog at Sears. You know, it was like 6 weeks before it came in or whatever. I mean, you had a lead time there. You know, nowadays, man, people want to go to the internet and buy it, and they want it shipped the next day. They don't want to wait. And it's like, man, this, you know, it's kind of like people not waiting to buy things when they can actually afford them. They want them now. They don't want them when they have the means to actually buy them. We want that shit now. It's the way the whole world's getting. You know, and the construction trades are getting the same way. You know, if somebody does want to build it built, they want it built yesterday. They don't want to wait for it. You know, it's like, it's just crazy. The one that really kills me is the businesses that are, they're renting office space or, you know, from somebody, and they know, because they, when they sign these leases, most of the time they're signing a 3 or 5 year lease. They know when that lease is going to be up, but they'll wait till the very last minute, and then they'll grab an architect and try to build their, we got to have it built by X day because our lease is up. It's like, well, why didn't you start this a year ago? Why do you wait till your lease is almost up? It's crazy. It's just fucking crazy. I don't know what this world's coming to. I swear to God, I don't. So, anyway, I wanted to recap and make sure y'all remember to hit our email links. Follow us on Twitter at the Bumpkin Bob Show. Look for us on Facebook. Make sure you get those job site tales into us. Remember, at some point, we're going to redo that old El Camino out there, and we're going to have y'all along for the ride and hopefully get it to a point where we can all drive it. Remember to be looking the next couple of weeks for our Death of an Icon. It's going to be at least one episode. I don't know, we may break it up and do a few minutes through a couple of episodes on that, but just be looking for that. And thank you for spending your Saturday morning with us. Again, happy birthday to Vicky and David, and happy anniversary to my son and his wife. And everybody enjoy the rest of your weekend. This is Bumpkin Bob signing off.